Grade 8 Conference, Lecture 4, The 8th Grader, Part 4. Now let's look at aspects of the ego. And I've said the ego isn't there yet, but we're talking about the ego. Do I contradict myself? Yes. First of all, the picture that we give of these four bodies, and that Steiner himself gave, and he acknowledged this. You've got to look at them from thousands of perspectives. He said it was much easier for him to enter into the spiritual world, to persuade spiritual beings to teach him things, to return from the spiritual world in one piece. All of that was relatively easy. What was hard was putting it into words, into earthly words, whether they were German, English, Slovakian, whatever. That's the hard part. So we talk about these bodies as though they are independent of one another, as though they are, you know, coming at certain times. And it's a little bit like looking at an anatomy book. You know, here's the heart, here are the lungs, here's the human eye. And then if, as I once had the privilege of being present for actual surgery, heart surgery, and what it takes to even find the heart within the body, and all the other stuff that's around it, that's connected to it, that's, you know, flowing all around and through it, we are complicated. The world is complicated. And anthroposophy is difficult to study because, unlike many other spiritual teachers, Steiner did not try to make it all simple so that, you know, he'd get a lot of fans and so on, but rather he tried to reflect that complexity. So yes, you're not really going to see the child's ego, certainly not in the first few grades. And maybe from grade 6 on up, I said a second or two in the whole year, you might see it. And I'll explain what I mean by that soon. But I would also say, on the other hand, the ego is always there. This is another aspect of being a human being, that the ego is present. It's just that its center of operations, its headquarters, is, spatially speaking, very, very far away. It's transmitting, to use a very materialistic modern idea, it's transmitting its nature from very, very far away. How far away? Steiner says, in a way, beyond the starry world. The astral body, as the name would imply, astra, stars, that is in the starry world, especially in the world of those wandering stars, the planets. The etheric body, very, very much living between the moon sphere, the moon's orbit around the Earth, and us. So it's much closer, living particularly in the atmosphere, wherever there's the presence of water. But the ego is very distant. But nonetheless, like a great circle, it is around us nonetheless, but its activity is masked, is overwhelmed by what's coming etherically and especially astrally. So it's often very difficult to sense that it is present. So that's one aspect of it. Another aspect of it is that we have to mature. Our bodies have to work out a kind of entente cordiale with one another. And that takes us it actually takes us 35 years, but nowadays it takes about 19 years for there to be the minimal conditions so that the ego can start to be incorporated. And when I say start, I mean start, because the etheric body, by the time we are 9, 10, 11 years old, by around fifth grade, the etheric body is about 95% incorporated within us. It unites with the physical body that strongly. The astral body, between ages 14 and 21, it is never more than 50% incorporated within us. Why is that? Because the astral body is the body that makes us social being, a social being. Therefore, half of our astral body at any time needs to be out there in the world, that is to say, in other human beings. So this is when the social life of the class becomes extremely important, when the astral body comes. The ego, even at its most intense connection with the human being, we could say that's really ages 19, 20, 21, and on. It's always at work, incorporating. It's never more than about 5%. We couldn't handle more than that because the ego is completely divine, completely cosmic. It has godlike force within it, and it would just do us in. It would burn us out. And we feel, you know, there have been very great individualities, Steiner among them, we'd say on the face of it, they died prematurely because those ego forces were so powerful that they could not really maintain their normal life processes. So that's the ego, very, very powerful there. And the eighth grader is not nearly mature enough to be able to hold on to that ego. But the astral body gives them a dress rehearsal for it by moving from temperament to personality. The astral body, in a way, allows a kind of reflection of that ego, sometimes a caricature of that ego, sometimes a remarkable simulacrum of that ego to express itself. And especially in grades 6, 7, and 8, this is why drama is so important. Yes, it is true, Rudolf Steiner did not speak ever about the class play. That's something that has arisen as a tradition over the years. And it is indeed the case that sometimes a class would be better off not doing a class play one or another year. Though in most schools it's become such a tradition, such an expectation, that teacher would be seen as really being, you know, deficient in carrying out her duties as a Waldorf teacher. No class play, no class trip, what are you talking about? So that's another issue. But definitely 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, definitely in North American, and I would say altogether Western world schools, the class play is a great healing force for the astral body, and it becomes a kind of a path. It opens a healthy path for taking on the ego because you're giving the students lines to speak, which an eighth grader, they would never come out of an eighth grader, you know, the words that are in these plays, like The Diary of Anne Frank or Our Time or A Midsummer Night's Dream or something like that. You know, these are adults. They're playing adults. And they're speaking words that you'd need an ego to have those words come out of you. But they get into the part. They memorize these lines. It is as though in the end, if they're really going, if you're teaching them how to act well, and they're really having enough time, 12 weeks, to prepare that play, it will seem to them as though those words are coming out of them. And parents will often say, I did not even recognize my daughter for the first 10 minutes of the play. I didn't realize that was my daughter. She seemed like she was 30 or 25 or something. That's a very good sign. That means then that in a way, you're giving the children a rehearsal practice for what it will be one day to carry an ego. So you want to choose the right play, you know, not just some kind of Broadway junk, but something that really, really is helping to elicit that ego within the young person. Now, let me look at this from another point of view as well. I mentioned in talking about the etheric body that it is very much like the guardian angel. And I think we could say it really is the guardian angel. If you took my courses in the earlier grades, grades 1, 2, 3, I speak there a lot about the unity in the healthy child, that the etheric body and the guardian angel are the same thing in many respects. We could say about the astral body that a healthy astral body will become then a vehicle for an archangel, an archangelic figure. Archangels are not responsible for individual human beings the way angels are. Archangels unite themselves with groups. So this tells us you cannot have one child in a class who has a really healthy astral body unless everybody else's astral body is also on a path of healing, has a degree of health. That the archangel is not interested in just being in one child's soul. The archangel wants to unite with quite a few. And you probably have heard it gets repeated like a religious incantation again and again until nobody even listens to it anymore. You know, that the health of the social entelechy will not occur until every individual has health, and the health of the individual cannot be there unless the, you know, the social group, words to that effect, has health. So very, very true. This is really understanding how the astral body works. It's all or it's nothing. It's like Ben Franklin's wonderful cartoon that you may show the children in eighth grade studying the American Revolution of, the snake that's chopped up into little pieces, each of them as is one of the colonies. And it's saying, you know, basically unite or die, or the expression will hang together or will hang separately. So this is very much what the astral body really needs so that the archangel can form. The ego can become, we might say, the point of departure, the stepping stone for an archon. A-R-C-H-O-N, who is one of the archai, which is the highest grouping in the first hierarchy. Archai are spirits not of individuals, they have no connection with individuals, not of social groupings. Only once in all of human evolution has an archon connected himself with a group, and that was in third grade. That was the stories of the Hebrew scriptures. Yahweh is an archon who united himself with the ancient Hebrews, with one people. But that's very unusual, very exceptional. That's why they wrote a whole book about it, or a lot of books about it. But the archon connects himself with the age, with the time. This is the being who looks after approximately 3,000 year periods of human evolution. For him, that's a lifetime. That's like our living to being 80 or 90 or so. For an archon, it's 3,000 years. That is the ego. That's why you don't see it much even in adults nowadays. Who is really living in the spiritual demands of the age, of our time? Who is really with it? Who's really there? And one might say here and there you see, you know, a Nelson Mandela, a Martin Luther King, a Gandhi. You see here and there those rare individuals who you feel can really embody a time, our age, and speak to it at its highest, even in the midst of the most horrible life circumstances. So that's where the ego will flash now and then, where you have taught a lesson in such a way that it connects that child with his or her mission for this lifetime. What does the world need from me at this moment? And you have to be very quick and very awake in your perceptive life so that you see it. You see that 1 second flash of light, and I assure you, the rest of your year, no matter how rough things get, no matter how despondent you may feel now and then, you will know why you are there. You will know why you are teaching. Moments like that remind us of our mission, why we chose teaching. And it's a wonderful thing, because it takes one to know one. When an ego flashes up in a child, you need a teacher with an ego to be able to meet that, to see it, to perceive it, and to encourage it, honor it, celebrate it. Not the personality of the child, not the kind of, you know, why don't people stop fighting war, or we've got to help, you know, so that people aren't polluting. I mean, that's all stuff that they could pick up from CNN or something, or from some app. No, it's when you silently, the silent recognition of that child, where they suddenly experience their I, their ego, their individuality. Those are important moments. And as I say, it will not happen to all children. It might be one, it might be two. All you need is one. And you realize that's why I have been here struggling, you know, starving to death with my salary. This makes it all meaningful. Now, we will be looking also not just at the child's growth and development, but your growth and development as well, the path of the teacher. And of course, there we'll look even more closely at the ego.